Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, Episode 3, for August 15th, 2009. There's a command line for that. This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much. It's time for This Week in Google, and joining us, a wonderful group, as always, starting with Gina Trapani of smarterware.org, former founder of Lifehacker, and a wonderful person who obviously rides a bike.
Howdy.
Because the bike is behind her in the image.
Yeah, I actually took it out this morning. It doesn't just hang on my wall.
Yay! That's great. Also here, Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com, a great commentator on journalism and all things new media. Great to have you once again, Jeff.
Always happy to be here. Third time.
Well, the plan is to have you on every show, but if you tire of it, let me know. And for the first time, a fourth around the table, Anil Dash, who is vice president at Six Apart, writes an amazing blog. We've quoted now in both episodes of This Week in Google at dashes.com. Hi, Anil.
Hello. I'm really excited to be here with
you guys. Great to have you. Anil's a great observer of this whole scene. Of course, Six Apart is one of the big movers in this scene, but you've been around for a long time, blogging since 1999, longer than any of us.
I guess so, yeah. 10 years. Time flies.
Gina was telling me that she and Jeff started their blog in 2001. I did too.
Mm-hmm. So it was a good year for blogging.
I guess it was. And you've been doing it since 1999, 10 years.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So before we get into the meat of the matter, I thought I would bring up one thing that was blog post. It's a little bit personal. It's Jeff Jarvis's blog post. Jeff, you revealed on your blog that you have prostate cancer.
Right. The doctor said that if you're going to get cancer, this is the one to get. So I feel as if I got the upgrade on cancer air. But it was very early. I'm very lucky. I know it. And living the public life that we all do, how could I do anything else but blog it? I had to.
Yeah. Well, no, you didn't have to. But I think it is true. We live in public, don't we?
There's such benefit that comes out of it. I've gotten an incredible outpouring of support and advice from friends and from people who have had the procedure. And only one nut came out from the result. So it's not bad.
You lost a nut? I'm sorry. You had the Lance Armstrong version, eh?
No, we hope not. Other things I will lose.
I
you
apologize.
Don't know what I'm going to lose.
I totally, totally apologize. So, good. So you'll have operation or will you have treatment?
So I hope to not miss a single show, by God.
Wow.
I'll be here. You won't want to know what's below the camera, but right. Everything will be fine.
They called Walter Cronkite Old Iron Pants because he never missed an episode. We'll have to come up with a similar name for Jeff.
Old Iron Balls. Yeah, there it is.
I'm sorry. I'm going to cut it out right now. No, wait a minute. That's wrong, too. Let's move on, shall we? There's a lot of news. You know, it's funny. When I first started thinking about doing a show like this, I thought, well, will there be enough Google news? Ha! Oh, my goodness. There's never any lack of news about Google. And, of course, this show is not, and Gina was very quick to make sure of it, not just about Google, but it's about cloud computing as well. So we cover Google and the cloud. And while there's been a lot of Google news, I think maybe the big news of the week is that Facebook bought FriendFeed on Monday. What do you guys think of that? And let's start with Anil, our guest. Give him the pride of place.
I think it's interesting. I'll have to be honest. I never used FriendFeed that much. I kind of felt like I got Facebook in my life. I've got Twitter. I got, you know, a million other services. It's kind of overkill. But the idea of aggregating all of my different services together is really, really appealing. And I think FriendFeed got such a great pedigree from day one because of the people that made it. You know, these were you know, really talented folks that came from Google, came from, you know, elsewhere in the industry that had an amazing background. So that, I think, gave FriendFeed perhaps a elevated place that they might not have had otherwise. And, you know, people were rooting for them. So I think it's interesting to think now all the conversation again is, you know, we tend to think about the technology. We tend to think about how are they going to integrate these different pieces and the cool features that they have. But I can't help but feel this is the same story it was day one. It's like these are people that have good ideas, and that's why Facebook wanted them.
Smart engineers are always valuable. Yeah, Paul and his partner, and I've forgotten his name, started wrote Gmail, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the reason FriendFeed's important, it's not important because of its size. I was a big FriendFeed fan, but I know there aren't very many of us. But the reason it was important is because they seem to get social media in a way that Twitter and others, including Facebook, didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably why Facebook was interested. Although I have to wonder, what does Facebook want to do with these guys? Gina, do you have a thought on it?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I would love to see FriendFeed's, you know, aggregation capabilities show up in Facebook. And I think Anil just said earlier that this kind of makes Facebook or gives them the ability to become sort of a widget company. I don't know. You know, I just recently got into to FriendFeed because of you, Leo, really, because we've been doing the Twig stuff on FriendFeed.
I lobby.
Well, it's, you know, it's a really interesting service. I didn't really have a need for it before either. What struck me about it the last couple of weeks I've been using it is it's pretty geeky. I mean, you kind of have to, it took me a little bit to grok it, which is kind of going to be kind of interesting to see, you know, how they integrate certain features that I didn't quite get right away into Facebook. I don't know, maybe I'm just daft. But one other comment that I heard was, you know, how is FriendFeed's, you know, real-time features and their feature set going to scale on Facebook? That'll be interesting to see. But I don't know, maybe kind of sad. I'm not a huge fan of Facebook. I mean, it's okay, but I definitely get much more value out of Twitter. So, and I've been really liking FriendFeed as well. So I'm not sure if, maybe I just need to manage my Facebook life a little more aggressively or something. But
Jeff, you're a big Facebook user. You support Facebook big time.
I have been. I think the irony here is that Facebook stumbled upon lowercase s, lowercase u, the notion of the live web in what they did. And the news feed that was controversial when Zuckerberg first did it, of course, became the spine of Facebook. And I don't know whether it inspired Twitter in any way, but Twitter really kind of follows in as a stepchild of the news feed at Facebook. But Facebook then fell behind in the live web. And so the irony is they had to catch up somehow. Whether FriendFeed can do that for them or not, I don't know. On the wiki, I put a link up to who was it? Kevin Marks did a great post today trying to analyze the success of Twitter. And he goes into a lot of things about the flow of the web. There's no kind of email backup constipation for us. The notion of publics and following, the notion of control of your society on the web. And so all of that, if you think about it, Twitter was very early on to it. I mean, Facebook was very early on to it, but they try to be 25 things at once. And Twitter was so simple that I think they lost the focus, and maybe a FriendFeed can bring that back.
It is an acknowledgement that the real-time web, or the live web, as you call it, is something that's happening and something important, isn't it? I mean, isn't that what FriendFeed is the real-time web?
Yeah, I think so. And that's the thing that Google, since this is Twig, isn't very good at. And so Google at some point, I think, is going to have to buy one of these players because they don't understand. Though one of the founders has said that he wanted to search the entire web every second, and that sounded absurd. I think we're headed that way.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting differentiation, because what I heard from it, from FriendFeed, was not so much just the real-time stream or the, you know, what Dave Weiner calls the river of news, but much more of the aggregation. It was assuming that if you used FriendFeed, you probably used half a dozen web services, not one.
And FriendFeed brought them all together for you.
Yeah, and I think that was as important as the real-time element. I think the idea, I mean, the thing I keep obsessing over is the biggest social network is the web itself, right? And we're so used to thinking of I'm on this network or I'm on that network. And FriendFeed to me felt like accepting the reality of we're not choosing one, we're choosing all of the above.
And yet the thing that is sticky about FriendFeed, at least was for me, is not that I can import everything in there, but the engagement and conversation that results from that. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes sense that this is what Facebook is looking for. It seems to me that Facebook is trying to change it. And this is a difficult thing to do. I mean, it really is built around a walled garden private model. You know, there's no public face to Facebook. You can't even Google Facebook entries. And I think it looks like they're trying to create a public face and open the walled garden. And in fact, when I look at what they did with CNN during the election with, you know, the CNN election page, which looked like a Facebook page, was actually a CNN page with Facebook widgets on it. And it seems to me that's at least part of their strategy going forward. It's a difficult proposition because everybody who's on Facebook right now expects privacy. In fact, probably that's why most people joined Facebook, is because it's not Googled. It's not public. It's a private conversation. Can you make that transition from walled garden to public garden? Has anybody ever done that?
Well, I think Google was trying to, with Kevin Marks there. The irony is Kevin has left Google since, but when he was there, he was looking at the open social efforts, and I forget what they called theirs, Friend Connect, right? Where you could leave your turkey tracks across the web and bring them in, whether that was your Amazon reviews or your Twitter feed or your Facebook comments or your YouTube videos or whatever, that adds up to us, right? That my presence online is my avatar. It is my life. And I think that's where you really want to go, not at Facebook, but wherever I want it to be.
Right. And I think that this is going to be where the battle lies, is between Google and Facebook to become this. Or do you think Google isn't going to be a social widget marketer? I mean, that's a great strategy for Google. What does Google want? They want to be everywhere. They want eyeballs everywhere, right?
Well, I wonder why Kevin left, because Kevin was doing great yeah, work with Friend.
I know.
And there is an opportunity to do something there. You know, I always say that Google has not won the entire world. It's the live web, the social web, the local web. And the mobile web are still to be conquered, and we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very likely everybody with a big network is going to try and turn it inside out, you know, and that's Google. That's, you know, certainly Facebook. I mean, I think even the old school players, if you look at the however many hundreds of millions of people have a AOL and Instant Messenger account, I think all those networks are going to try to turn themselves inside out. It'll be a race to see who does it in a way that other sites actually won't use.
Well, and the lesson is AOL, which maintained a walled garden and never really did open, and look what happened to them.
Gina, is Friend, now that you've started using FriendFeed a little bit, is it kind of the cloudy use you've been talking about in terms of adding value to an otherwise existing API and feed?
You know, ever since I started my FriendFeed account, which I did back in the day when I first heard about it, I use it solely as an aggregator. So for people who aren't into social media at all, I could say, if you want to know everything that I'm doing on the web, just go to my FriendFeed account, because it's all there. You don't have to be in one place or the other. The functionality that I was not sure about, I didn't realize that you could forward items to, say, like the Twig room, which I didn't realize you could do. And the conversations are really interesting and cool. I'm still not clear about where all of those comments come from. I feel like some of them come from outside sources. Some of them happen on FriendFeed. I'm not
FriendFeed,
sure.
So FriendFeed, you're right. The likes can come from anybody.
Right.
The comments can come from anybody. The posts are people you're following, and this was a very interesting thing. You see, to me, Paul and company, the thing that Facebook got was they understood better than anybody the kind of the nitty gritty details of how to make these social graphs work. They had a friend of a friend feature where if a friend of yours liked something from somebody else, it would also appear in your feed. And it really helped in discovery. They also have search, which is something else Facebook, I think, really wants and needs, and really where the money is, right, for Facebook. I think FriendFeed is very engaging, but it's very hard to understand and learn. And I think, boy, I mean, if you didn't grok it right out of the box, I don't know who would.
Yeah, I feel like I still don't get it. There's this thing to aggregation that is just hard. And I look at, like, 10 years ago, LiveJournal had that ability. You had a friends page. You could aggregate in all of your friends' updates. You could pull in RSS feeds. And even, you know, I look at Tumblr today or a couple years ago started doing that. And all of these services have these couple of traits that are really common, which is the friend page, the aggregation of everything your friends is doing, is completely addictive. It pushes towards really very short updates instead of long updates. But then you have this point of responses and comments and replies being completely disjointed. I remember I discovered LiveJournal because somebody had syndicated my feed in there, and there were comments replying to it. And I was like, I don't even know what this community is, and here's people talking, thinking they're talking to me. I still have that happen on FriendFeed today, where I don't spend a lot of time there, and people reply to my post there, and I have no way to even know that they're doing it.
Right.
And these conversations take on a life of their own. I think that is a fundamentally hard challenge with trying to bring the outside web into a closed, you know, walled garden, and maybe that's why the networks have to open up to avoid that problem.
I think there are ways to solve it. Discuss and the new Echo from JS Kit. Are interesting. These are commenting systems that fold the comments from all over the place back into the blog. There something happened this week, and I think Anil, you might have been part of this. Something happened this week, and I think it happened because of the friend feed sale. People said, Dave Weiner sent me a note and said, well, really, you should go back to blogging. I think what happened, what people did is they abandoned the blog and they went to the microblogs, and they said, well, I have a presence on Facebook, Twitter, and or friend feed. That's where I'm, and it happened to me, that was the easiest place to put stuff, so I stopped blogging so much. And I think people, do you think people are going to come back to the blog, Anil?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's almost a political thing. Like, I
you own your stuff.
Yeah, it's straight up about ownership. I mean, my background before I was really even in the tech industry, I was in the music business, and I saw the difference between artists that own their stuff and those that didn't. And what they could do with their careers. And so I like Mark Zuckerberg fine. I'm friends with Ev and Biz. Like, I admire Twitter very greatly. But I'm not ever going to create the most valuable things that I write. I put a lot of effort into the things I create. I'm not going to put them someplace that somebody else owns them.
A lot of people who put them on friend feeders having second thoughts saying, what have I done? This is another meme that's just sprung up. We're all investors in these companies who don't get paid when the company liquidates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt that with Twitter. I felt kind of, you know, like I put my heart and soul into Twitter, and they abandoned me for Oprah or Ashton or somebody. but that's what happens to geeks, right? We are early adopters. We move in, and if the company that we support is successful, they go broad anyway.
But with blogging, when the other people came in, it was still a victory for us. My site didn't go away.
You're right.
It overshadowed in the importance, you know, of the people using, you know, WordPress or TypePad or whatever. Like, your importance doesn't go away when somebody else new comes into the medium.
But aren't you really just another walled garden? I mean, aren't you?
I don't feel, on my site, I'm king, right? And I think, you know, I see that on Gina's site, on Jeff's site. It's like, if they want to do something creative and interesting and spend, you know, days and days on it and tons of time and money, at the end of the day, they own it and nobody can take that away. I think that's pretty important.
But you lose all these things that Kevin Marks talks about in his blog post. He talks about flow, where there's just this kind of flow of information. You see faces of people, and that, I guess, you know, there are ways to solve that with Friend Connect or my blog log, or there are a lot of different ways to do that. I know Six Apart has some good solutions. This is an interesting one. He says it's phatic. That's a term I'd not heard before. PHATIC. Full of social gestures that are like apes grooming each other.
Mm-hmm.
But all of this stuff appears in places like Twitter, but does it appear on your blog? Don't you lose a lot
should.
Of that?
It I should. I think actually the great blogs do it. One of my favorite sites is Metafilter, Matt Howey's site.
It definitely
been
is that.
For 10 years.
Yeah.
And there are a million little gestures you can do there of, like, you click a little plus sign and you favorite something, or you give something a thumbs up. I think the sites that are really seeing that succeed, I would look for the geeky side of things, Stack Overflow. My wife runs a real popular food site, Serious Eats. Each of these sites, I think, has this amazing sense of, like, you can make those little gestures. And I mean, when we have a service, Vox, it's kind of like a friends and family
love Vox thing. Yeah,
thanks. And that was, I mean, we had this thing that Mina Trott was really adamant about having, this is good. And it was just being able to click a box and say that something somebody did was good explicitly as a gesture. And I think it has to be lowering the threshold from, oh, I go in to the comment form and maybe I signed in and I typed, you know, some text and then I hit post. Like, that's a lot of steps. And you want people to just be able to kind of give you that head nod of, hey, that was pretty nice. And then if they want to add more to it, that's great too.
But they're complimentary, right? I mean, you know, Jay Rosen uses Twitter to push an idea or to link to something. People of the New York Times use it to promote their stories. I think that reporters use it to get to gather data in real time. I used it today to find out something for a presentation I'm doing this week. I think they're not either or. The question is, how do you to bring them together more?
I feel like blogs are like islands. And they're loosely if confederated, but they're still islands. That are we going back to RSS?
I think we're upgrading RSS.
I thought it was dead.
Please,
I'm telling you, Dave Weiner. I'm going to call Dave.
my answer to people who say RSS is dead is always the same, which is like, okay, then stop using it.
Right, we're using it nonstop in every possible way. Yeah.
We always say it's dead when something becomes so ubiquitous it's invisible. But I think we just upgrade RSS. We give it, you know, the ability to be faster and be part of that immediate real time stuff that, you know, like what Jeff was talking about. I think we put likes into it. So like Google Reader now, if you view your own feed in Google Reader, you can see who has liked posts that you've done. I'm sure it's a matter of time so you can pull that back out.
Reader's looking more and more, I hate to say it, like friend feed. I'm going to talk a little bit about Reader. It's my tool of the week, but it's looking more and more like friend feed with likes. And in fact, Facebook, it was pretty obvious, was stealing a page from friend feeds, a book with likes and commenting. And that live stream is looking more and more like friend feed. I could easily see friend feed just appearing as that middle column, that news stream, almost intact.
Do you think that this is a lot of this is this discussion is about a battle for who, you know, what pages come up when someone searches for a person online, right? So you have like Facebook wants to have public pages for people. They have public search listings already. I think that they're going to, you know, enhance those with the friend feed integration if they do continue with friend feeds aggregation. Google profiles, which we talked about last week, is doing a similar thing. But honestly, when it comes down to it, a blog, which you write and update frequently, is the best way to get into search results and to get found and to put out there the things that you want to put out there. So, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, this is just a giant people search play, you know, the friend feed Facebook discussion or sale.
Yeah. Who owns your name online? I think it's a big part of the conversation. And I would delete my account on every service out there before I'd let them come up ahead of my own site for my name.
Ah, so we should all blog. Well, you all are blogging again, but everybody else should stop messing around with the Twitter. And blog, or should you Twitter and blog?
Do both. You know, hook them together. Hook them together, right? Like, get some value out of it so that it's driving people into your.
So how do you hook them together so that you blog whenever you blog, it goes to Twitter, but then when you tweet, does it go to your blog?
God help me, but I'm going to bring up Wave because I think there's something about that says that you start to combine set units and flows, and we try to figure that out. You know, part of the problem in media is that we have been making people come to us, you know, follow the light, children, come to our sites. You've got to come to us.
That's what I have. That's the problem I have with blogging.
Mm-hmm. You're right there, Leo. And so what we need is some new architecture that hasn't been invented yet, that is some combination of a distributed flow and assets. If a blog post is an asset, how does that fit in with the flow of Twitter, with the ability to comment on it, with the ability of people to distribute it? I don't think we've seen anything close to this yet.
Yeah, we've really separated the act of reading and writing, right? We've put the part that has to do with interacting with your audience 100 miles away from the part that has to do with creating content. And we need to bring those things in tighter circle. I think the problem is right now, everybody that's brought real-time elements into blogging has done it by saying, well, here's the latest noise about that tag that you're talking about.
Yes.
You know, as opposed to what real time can do at its best, which is here's a shared experience we're having. I was playing with Chartbeat, which is a
love Chartbeat,
a stats app. It's a very cool. I'm partial because they're based here in New York, which means that they're awesome. And I got that sense of, you know, I wrote a post and I was very lucky. A couple people shared it on Twitter and it said, oh, you know, 200 people are on your site reading this right now. And I thought, one, I've been blogging 10 years. I've never known that. I've never known there's this many people looking at something all at once. And two, they have no way of telling that either. You can't tell it's a crowded room. And, you know, to their credit, friend feed room, you know when there's a lot of people there.
Right.
And I think that's a totally solvable problem.
I mean, you guys must be looking at that at Six Apart. How do we do that? It's just technology? Do you have a little dashboard? I know when on our video feeds, we used to have how many people are watching. And people miss that. They love that feeling that there was a lot of people there with you at the same time.
And it makes you feel good about what you're reading or watching, too.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I must have good taste because there's 100 other people here with me. This is the show to be at. Like, you
We're
go to a concert.
Social beasts. We like swarms.
Yeah.
We like swarms. We want to be part of that. So you think it's just technology? You think you could solve that just by a dashboard or something on the?
No, I mean, I think technology is a tiny part of it. I think it's mostly social. I think it's all about like thinking through what are the things that make us have that great feeling. Like I went and saw a concert the other night, and it was 3 a.m. and everybody was hopping up and down, totally awake, and it was because it was a great show, and it was one of those like, oh, they're here for this moment as much as they're here for the band. And technology, we would literally be looking at that room and be like, well, what guitar are they playing? What drum kit is he using? And it's like, right. That's actually not the most important part.
It's still fun.
Yeah, it was super fun. But yeah. We need to not look at the nuts and bolts of it so much as like, what are the behaviors, I think.
So Billy gave me a Chartbeat account for the page that most of you are watching right now, the live.twit.tv page. And it's really, it's interesting. I would love to surface it. I don't know how you surface it.
There's a share link on Chartbeat that you can have this little copy link up at the top of the page. At least on mine, I have that. So share your dashboard history, I think.
Okay. And that goes, I could put that, maybe I could put that at the bottom of the page or something. Interesting.
Yeah.
You could see all over the world where people are watching, and there's people in Australia and Asia and there's some one person on from Russia. Hello, Russia. That is a kind of a neat thing to be able to share with people. The problem I have with the blog is it just seems so, I don't know, maybe it's just too personal. It's so personal. It's like, this is me. You know, if I want to see Anil, I have to go to Anil.
Mm-hmm.
How do we aggregate?
We don't have a way to seamlessly go back and forth yet.
Yeah. All right. So there's a challenge left for the listener. Solve that problem and you'll be a rich, rich person.
Yeah.
Google launched Caffeine this week. Gina, what's Caffeine? I can't figure it out. It looks exactly like Google to me.
Yeah, to the end user, it looks pretty much the same. In fact, when you bookmarked this story, I thought, wow, I don't really see the differences.
Right.
But can you guys hear me okay? I feel like
you blacked
going
out.
Going in and out. I blacked out for a second. Yeah. Okay. But what it is, I just saw that interview with Matt Cutts. I mean, the search web spam, head of the web spam team at Google. Mm-hmm. It's a total rewrite of Google's, not a total rewrite, but a major rewrite of Google's indexing engine, I believe.
It's
and
really
the
fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So pops up like instantly.
Yeah. Yeah. Google generally does though. I tried a bunch of searches and I really didn't see that big a difference. But it sounds like, Matt said that it was a pretty big update, as big as an update as they had another update in like 2005, which is quite some time ago. But I don't see much of a difference.
Functionality, it's the same, I guess.
Functionality is the same. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool that they're putting the sandbox out there and letting site owners who are particularly concerned with their rank give it a try and send feedback. That's pretty cool. I think that's the first time they've ever done that, as far as I know. Nice move toward sort of being a little more open and beta testing search results, which I don't think they've done before, although they beta other stuff.
Yeah. So what would you do as a site owner? You'd look in and say, so the results change? Are they different than the other Google, the original?
Yeah, I mean,
Classic.
If you compare them side by side, which I did for several searches, you can check to see, what results are different. For me, the searches that I tried, it wasn't very different. I did several searches for topics that I know are hot on Lifehacker,
right,
and some other projects that I've worked on, and they look pretty much the same. I don't know. Have any of you guys seen any significant differences?
No, but you're going to see it in more big statistics. I when Google burps, everybody else gets ulcers. And I used to consult for about.com, which gets 80% of its traffic from Google and half its ad revenue from Google. And whenever Google would so much as change a dial a little bit, the impact on the business was big, potentially.
Right.
And they monitored every possible metric they could. And I think this has a huge impact in the long run on companies that have a lot of search. If you lose 3% of your value in a given Google juice area, that has a big impact on you, and it's hard to see that in individual searches.
Yeah, it might be certain terms, too, that are really making the difference for certain companies, and they just are terms that might not register for us, things that we don't look up. My experience in testing a couple terms was basically it was harder to tell a difference between the two versions of Google than it was between Google and, say, Bing. Right. And even those two were barely distinguishable.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Six Apart probably has a lot of interest in this, since, you know, how well Google searches your hosted blogs is probably a pretty big deal to your customers.
It matters. Yeah. I mean, it matters a lot for that. Honestly, the thing that is getting a lot more attention from our customers is, and I think bloggers in general, is how quick we're getting to search engines as opposed to ranking. Right. Like they know the SEO. I mean, the tips haven't changed in 5 years. Update right. a lot, right. put a good title in, you know, we do all the URLs. That stuff is all automatic these days on any blogging tool. But we've had this thing for a couple of years that today we'd call a fire hose, like what Twitter has of, you know, all the updates. And the Typepad service that we do is how to have fire hose. And it's funny, it's been running for years, and it's been the last 6 months where all of a sudden it's really interesting to people of how quickly am I going to get into Google, as opposed to where do I rank in the search terms? Because they're like, I know I'm going to rank, but I want to be the newest result, not the first result.
That's that real-time web again, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's a radical change. I think that's as big a change as like before PageRank and after. I think, you know, there's no name for like PageRank for newness as opposed to PageRank for authority. But, you know, again, we've all been blogging for 8-10 years. That thing that was new about blogs is like the newest post was at the top. And now we're finally going to think about like search engines where that's true. Like the only search engine where that's true right now is Twitter and FriendFeed.
Is this related to the push button web that you were talking about?
I mean, it was one of the things that informed, I wrote a post a couple weeks ago called Push Button Web, just saying there's a lot of really interesting real-time tech out there. I was thinking more about for developers, how do you get a message out there? But certainly one element of it is search. It is going to be as important to have search engine delivery as search engine optimization.
Leo, in London, the Telegraph led the way on the story of MP expense scandals. And they got some crap for not going web first, but the director of digital there explained to me that they wanted to be on top of Google News at every opportunity, so they scheduled the release of the stories just to be on top of Google News.
So the news cycle begins with Google these days, not CNN or NBC. How interesting. Wow.
But I think we've all even known that, right? Haven't you put out a blog post on a Thursday morning because you know it's a big day for traffic? Yeah. I mean, Gina, you live and die in that world for a long time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Is that true? So Thursday morning, that's the time. Right?
Yeah. Well, for us, I mean, we would analyze our daily traffics, like what time of the day. So we publish our features, or Lifehacker publishes its features at 9 a.m., for example, which is 9 a.m. on the West Coast and then noon on the East Coast. So people are just arriving to work or going to lunch and then that kind of thing. Normally, I would go for like a Tuesday. You know, if I had a story that I thought could really get legs and it wasn't time dependent, I would go for a Tuesday or a Wednesday. But yeah, certainly think about that stuff a lot.
My wife or some, I mean, it was Dane laughed at me because I was going to do a Twitter post that I wanted everybody to see. And I said, well, I have to wait till 5 o'clock East Coast. And he kind of laughed at me. And he said, you pay attention to when you tweet? I said, of course, don't you? You're tweeting the middle of the night. It's going to be Australia that sees it. You know, you have to know you have to know where your audience is.
And I think we've all internalized that without even realizing.
Maybe so.
I mean, I've been trying to do big blog posts every week, and I did the first one or two on like, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, and then I just started doing them Fridays because it was easier to get done for the end of the week. But it was great because Fridays aren't crowded.
There's not as much stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And I tended to write the thing where I'm like, well, I want to get the people that are actually going to spend a little bit of time on the weekend looking at this stuff who are they're probably a little more hardcore geeks than the people that just do it 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. And so they get this slow build, and you also have that sense of nobody wants to share anything on Twitter or on friend feed if they feel like everybody's already seen it. They want to be the person sharing right. that thing first.
The first one.
Right. And that's a lot easier to happen when there's lower noise, lower volume, you know, and there's not such a buzzy environment over the weekend. And I think this stuff is all directly related to like what, you know, Google must be doing with updating their index is thinking about like these behaviors of what, you know, how sharing and amplification changes what we're writing.
You hit a couple of home runs, more than a couple, Anil, lately with your blog. We talked about the push button web 2 weeks ago. Last week, we talked about the web way versus the wave way. I know you heard that conversation. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, you all covered. It's one of those situations where I did a little bit of work on the writing, and then you guys took it into this whole other level. So it was, I mean, it's really exciting. It was like, wow, there's more there than I thought. I fear people thought I was being very negative about Wave, and Wave is exciting. Like, I'm not anti-Wave. I just think it's super complicated. Like, as a user, you look at it and you're like, I kind of don't get it. And I think what Jeff said about this is important enough that we should all be thinking about that as a new way of interacting is absolutely right. But the actual experience of clicking around it, I felt like was like, maybe I'm slow. I mean, I didn't get friend feed either. So I guess I'm no longer an early adopter, but like, I was like, this is tough. This is tough. And I don't see how this happens. I think it's a lot more likely we're going to see little bits and pieces of this. And in the same way that Facebook's not going to do over the whole site to look like friend feed in a day.
Right.
They're going to put little bits and pieces out there.
It's funny because Facebook isn't easier to use than anything else, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. No.
Maybe it's because Facebook gives you little payoffs along the way. You know, you set up a page and then your first girlfriend says, you want to be my friend? And so, oh boy, okay. And so there's little hits of payoff along the way, little crumbs for you to follow that drag you through it. There must be some way of designing this.
You know,
say again?
Wife knows this, I hope, about your first girlfriend.
I'm having lunch with my first girlfriend next week. I haven't seen her in 36 years.
And was it because of Facebook?
Absolutely.
Really?
And then my fourth grade girlfriend sent me a note.
Fourth grade, Leo. I'm impressed.
I thought, well, okay, you know, fourth grade. She said, you remember when I used to kick you in the shins? And I said, oh, yeah, that was true love. In fourth grade, it's just a little more obvious, you know.
For 9 years old, that's pretty good.
but you know, Facebook has once I jokingly called, you know, Facebook classmates.com on steroids, but it's gone beyond that. You have to grow beyond that or you're not going to.
That's Google, too. I argue that young people today won't have the experience that you and I have because they will never lose touch with people. I, too, lost touch with my high school girlfriend, and thanks to Google, she found me, and I got to apologize for being a cad at age 17. And for that matter, to find out whatever happened to her and she
it's
me.
It's fascinating.
Never would have happened. Yeah. We would have gone to our graves never knowing. And so I think that the impact on friendship and relationships for young people is profound in ways that we can't imagine. And it's not just Facebook. It's just the ability for people to have Google shadows and to find them again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this brings us full circle to our conversation about who owns your name on the web and how you can control that. Because, I mean, Facebook's making a play for that. It certainly did with the vanity URLs. But you still can't Google Leo Laporte and find my Facebook page. I don't think you can.
If you have the vanity URL and you make it public, you can. But I mean, I think it's an interesting question because why do we assume that an old girlfriend or an old boyfriend is looking for us on Facebook but not on Google? Like, why is that behavior so normal on Facebook but creepy and stalkerish if you do it on Google?
No,
I agree. Know. There is the difference.
No, I don't think so.
well, you guys disagree. Now I'm curious to hear which one of you is right.
I don't think so. I think it's just another way to find people to find old friends, and we'll have many ways in the future.
I'll tell you the difference, and this is exactly the problem Facebook faces, is that Facebook is all permissions-based. Google's not.
Well, that's the problem, and it's also a great asset, is you have control.
It is.
Of your public. If you go back to Kevin Marks, it's your public and how you define your public.
And yet, I think Facebook realizes that that's essentially a walled garden and they don't want to go the way of AOL and Yahoo or whatever. They don't want to be a content company. And so they need to somehow create a public face. That I think that's their great challenge. Google's great challenge is it's all public face. You don't control it in any way. They don't have a social. There's no social graph to Google. Is Wave their attempt to add a social graph? Does Google need a social graph?
Well, Regina put up the link to Reader and the social aspects there now, right?
Yeah, we have to talk about that because that's a huge shift. I don't think most Reader people will notice it immediately.
Yeah.
What happened there?
Yeah, so Google Reader has been adding features. They've had some social features for a while now, which I have to tell you, I hadn't used for a while because, you know, I spent 4 years waking up really early when I lived in California to write Lifehacker, and I would just go through, you know, hundreds and hundreds of feeds per day, and it was a very solitary experience for me. But now that I'm, you know, sort of living a little bit more of a slacker life, I let my friends find stuff. So I've started, you know, following friends in Google Reader, which you can do now. And it's really great. I mean, it's really, really great. And Neil is much more likely to find a link that I'm interested in than if I go, you know, by hand through all my feeds. So this week they added some more social features, and you'll see it in the left-hand sidebar. I think it's like one module down. Basically, people in your Gmail contacts and your contacts list can follow your shared items and what items you liked, and you can share items with notes. So it's pretty cool. They are trying to create a social graph here. I didn't really pay attention to it at first because honestly, I don't think Google is very good at social stuff at all. They've never really been good at it. And even this is still kind of awkward.
It doesn't feel right, does it?
It doesn't feel right. It's not fully baked yet. Part of the issue is that people follow you. And so the list that you're showing right now on the screen, people follow you. And on one page, you see people who are following you and then people who want you to follow them back. And you can ignore in one list, but you can't in another. I mean, it's still a little not fully baked.
I mean, talk about hard to grok. I don't understand at all what's going on there.
Yeah.
And I've been spending a lot of time looking at it. It is wonky.
It's wonky.
But it's funny because we say, like, oh, they're bad at social. But my experience of going into Reader was I already had a buddy list. It was already populated with a lot of people that I knew that were smart. There was a lot of good content. Like, you could do a lot worse than to have that as the starting point, like fixing
the
UI.
That's true. But you know, but it's your Gmail contacts. So like, I don't have contacts in Reader, but I have them in Gmail, so it connects them. So that's a little weird. You're like, oh, and like people are following me, and I'm not quite sure how they found me.
I don't even know who these people are.
Yeah, like they're people that you don't really know, and you're like, how do they know? I mean,
what's missing? There's social without the graph. It's like. Yeah. There's no connection to my life here.
I had the opposite experience, which was that my wife was like, oh, Gina shared your post. She must have liked it. And I was like, really? Because I didn't know.
Right.
And, you know, we email, we're connected. We were on GChat together. Like, I don't know what some missing part, like, and I still don't know, literally some part that was missing said, you're not connected and you can't know this. And so I had to manually go and find it out. And I think, so like, those are solvable problems. But like the core thing of, are there millions of people here that have already made a list in GChat or GTalk or Gmail or whatever G other products there are, like that those things all exist. I did, you know, briefly have a network on Orkut sometime many years ago.
Oh, yeah, I remember them, yeah.
And I have family in India, so I actually, like, they're actually active there. And yet none of that is tied into it. And I think part of the reason is the Reader team is scared of it because they did share a couple years ago. They had the sharing link and Reader, and they made it that like you clicked share and it would share with everybody that you'd ever emailed on Gmail or something.
Oh, that's not good. People freaked out, right?
It was like this, oh, you can't scare people's behavior. And now as a result, they've been so afraid to do that, they've had to add additional behavior. So I can go to an individual post that I like and I can star it, I can share it, I can share it with a note, and I can like it.
It's really too complicated.
And then in addition, there's a way to like comment as well. Like, so there's like four or five different things you can do. And I swear to you, I have no idea what they do that are different. If I like something, I click all of them. I make them all light up.
Add star, like, share with note, email. Just do it all.
This way I've indicated, yeah, I'm really on board with this thing. But they might as well make them all one switch because I have no idea what they do.
And this week they added send to this week as well. They integrated other services so you can send items to in fact that's the real thing that is like that is new this week, the send to. And what's cool about that too is that they made it open so you can create custom URLs. So you can say make this a PDF, for example, and use, you know, a service that turns things into PDF. That was really neat.
That's the first thing I did is I added the save as PDF. That was a post I can't remember the blog, but it was a really great little tip. And then they've added, you know, they didn't have Friend Feed at first. They've added Posterous. They've added Friend Feed. They've added a few extra sites
Tumblr's there, which is great. So so that's pretty cool. The feature that I really like that launched this week isn't social at all. It gives you the option to mark all items as read that are older after a certain date.
Hallelujah.
This is the feature that I loved in my desktop reader now that I finally have in Google Reader. So you can say, you know, I've got a news folder that some days I just don't have a chance to look at it. And I love the idea of being able to say, mark everything in this folder that's older than a day, because basically news that's older than a day, I'm not going to look at. So I think it's a day, week, and 2 weeks. So that's awesome. Yeah. Really loving that.
So you know
that.
What? I love the feature too, and I'll disagree. I think it is a social feature. I think liberating people from obligation and stress is absolutely necessary as a social feature.
Yes.
And I think that's the part with Twitter of like, you missed the first page of tweets. Oh, well, they're gone. It's okay. Same thing with Facebook. And I think I didn't get it like 10 years ago when Dave Weiner was talking about River of News, and I got it much, much later of like being able to have what Kevin Marks was calling a flow, that it's okay if you miss some of the flow, is essential to social behavior. If you show up late to a party, you're not like, what was every conversation I missed before I got to this party?
Right. You don't care.
In order for me to have contact.
Yeah.
You show up, you go, you leave, you got to run.
Right.
There's something else going on. No problem. And so I actually think mark all stuff as read is absolutely essential for social features to work.
Well, this is going to sound funny, but as people reacted to my announcement of my disease, I found myself letting the Twitter and the friend the Twitter stuff kind of flowed over me. Right, mm-hmm. I didn't have to respond. I was grateful. Email, I suddenly felt an obligation to respond.
Yeah.
I don't know why. The social conventions of these various media, Facebook, if it was a direct message, I responded. If it was wall, I didn't. And on and on. I found myself with these built-in presumptions about my obligation to respond. And that's a funny social angle to it.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, it's interesting. Kevin Marks did an interesting thing. It makes sense that Kevin would understand how this works better than anybody else. I don't even know how he did this. He shared his article that you were talking about, Anil, how Twitter works in theory. And then he put a little, I don't even know how he did this, a little quote mark that says, I guess that's the note part. Question for those reading my shared items, is sharing my own post like this helpful or redundant? So there is a social aspect. I mean, I don't think he's going to get much engagement because of just kind of the difficulty of responding to that.
And here's the bug, too, is that The only reason he's probably even able to share his own post in the RSS reader is because there's no way for Google to know he wrote that.
Now that's
right?
a flaw.
It's just another feed.
Right.
And like the thing we have to be able to solve, because then you can actually do some interesting stuff where you can say, I'm the owner of this.
They do know, though. They do know through Google profiles. In fact, this is another feature that launched this week, is that you can say, show me all the people in my contacts list and the feeds that they own. And the feeds that you own, quote unquote, are the ones that you list in your Google profile. So like Anil, like I was looking at yours, and you've got like a buttload of links on your Google
is that
profile,
a metric
which
unit?
That's a metric.
Where do I do that? Where do I find that? That's the other problem, is where the hell is any of this?
Yeah,
stuff,
I mean,
right?
There's no coherence to the whole Google thing. And I think this is one of the things they have to reckon with. I thought about this. Even if I just want to create content with them, you know, I don't know if it's talk or chat or
what am I doing?
Or whatever.
Well, and chat's tied into this, too.
Yeah, somehow.
Because I see people that are on my chat list, I somehow are automatically shared or something. I don't
know. Kind of what scares the hell out of me with Wave is yet another one.
Right.
Click on Browse for Stuff in Google Reader's left-hand column.
Okay, Browse for Stuff.
And then up on the top of
which,
the right
by the way, what does that even mean, Browse for Stuff?
Yeah, I know, what
stuff?
Is that, Browse for
I've
Stuff?
I've got all my feeds here. Browse what for what stuff?
And imagine the meeting where that came out.
You know, we got to add a high-level menu item that says, under Notes, Trends, Your Stuff, Browse for Stuff.
Huh? Browse for Stuff. And then click on From People You Follow.
Yeah. Okay, so and this is stuff for people I follow.
So there you see a list of people
and all their stuff,
all their stuff, which they've claimed on Google profile. See, this is the thing. All these links happen between like disparate products, and you're like, oh, these are my Gmail contacts. Oh, these are links from Google profiles, but it doesn't even say that. This also launched this week, which is interesting.
Well, these don't even mean anything, right? Like I could claim Smarterware, right?
You could. There's a way to verify, and actually Leo did this. I haven't done this. There's a way to claim a site or feed. Leo, you verified your URL,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Okay, there's two things you can verify. Your name. We talked about that last week. And right. Google allows you in your Google account to add verified emails.
Oh, emails.
And once
okay.
you've done that, then it knows these domains. So it's verified domains. It won't show the email, but it shows on my profile, leoville.com, twit.tv, and techguylabs.com are verified domains of mine.
Well, and then there's the thing, Google Webmaster Tools lets you verify that you own a site. And
yes.
Google Apps for your domain lets you verify that you own a site. Those are two completely different mechanisms, and those are completely untied to this. I mean, there's just from Google, there's half a dozen ways to say I own this feed. And even if I've done all of them, which I have, it still doesn't know that in Reader.
But isn't this, again, whether it's Facebook or Google or someone, the ownership of your identity is going to be the key hub to all of this idea of getting past Leo's problem with the blog and having to go there and having to say, who the hell is Gina? What does she have? Where is she? Is it really her? That's going to be vital, and no one's won that yet, but it's a huge win if you can get it.
And the most ridiculous thing is owning a URL and proving you own it is one of the only problems that is solved. Like OpenID, you can actually say, I verify, I control this URL.
But can't you say it of others' URLs? Who's verifying that you do, in fact, own that URL?
With OpenID, you can't.
You have to put some JavaScript on it.
Yeah.
But that's only your OpenID canonical URL, right? I guess
there's a thing called delegation where I can say, so I don't run an OpenID server, but I can say I own dashes.com by pointing it at whatever provides
I do that with my site. So then now that becomes my site because I've put that JavaScript on there.
Yeah, or that little line in the HTML, tag. Whatever it is. Yeah. But the point is that...
the same with Twitter and with Facebook and...
You can't, because you don't own those servers.
That's
the
problem.
Well, you could even, to some degree, with Twitter by saying, I'm going to use the authentication, the OAuth system that they have. Facebook maybe could do it through Facebook Connect. I mean, the problem is you're talking about three or four different systems, but it's three or four. It's not 100. And that's the funny thing is that even though we have this ability to say, if nothing else... I control this one URL where this feed lives.
Right.
Even that ability isn't being used. And instead, we're here we are manually typing in, I own this web domain, and I can still go into Reader and say, I run Smarterware or I run twit.tv, and they can't stop me from saying that right now.
Right.
Right. Right. That's true.
This is a huge change, this Reader change, though.
It's quietly huge.
It does. It's quietly huge. Nobody knows about it. Well, we're telling them about it. It's funny because I was moving a little bit away from two things, blogs and RSS readers, because Twitter and the real-time web, blah, blah, blah. And this week, two things, they keep pulling me back. Two things have pulled me back to the blog and to RSS aggregation.
What do each of you use as your primary RSS reader?
Gina?
Google Reader.
Anil?
Google Reader. And the cool thing about it is it's semi-real time now with the PubSub HubBub stuff they did. Any FeedBurner feed that updates shows up in real time and Reader, it blinks for me. And I think that's going to be there for everybody soon. That's crazy.
Pretty
that's
cool.
Actually, that's as compelling as what Friend Feed or Twitter are
pretty
doing.
Pretty cool.
That's going to be huge.
I use Google Reader also. How about you, Jeff?
I'm still on NetNewsWire.
I use NetNewsWire too because it syncs with Google Reader.
Yeah, now it does.
So you're still, you know,
just it's hard for me to adjust. I like Google Reader.
I'm using both NetNewsWire and Google Reader, but that's good because I can now, you know.
The one feature that Google Reader doesn't have yet, and actually this was going to be in our wish list section, but I'll say it now. I mean, they're adding all these social features, which are cool, but you still can't, you still can't subscribe to a passworded feed in Google Reader. It doesn't handle private feeds, which isn't that big a deal to most people, but it is kind of a big deal for web applications you have to log into to get
right.
data.
Right.
And I just don't understand. I mean, that's the one reason
that's a weird thing not to have.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's why you use a desktop news reader, right? One, hit the refresh button. We talked about this. Hit the refresh button. You know you're getting the latest, right? Google's going to solve that Google Reader's going to have that with the real-time updates. But then the second one is private feeds from your web-based project management app, for example, that kind of thing. So I'm interested to see them build that in. I would imagine they would have built that in before this stuff, but
that one feels like a tech problem, right? Where like there's a million things that can go wrong with like passwords. You're storing passwords for people's feeds. People can share items in their public page that were formerly private. Like it opens up a can of worms, and it's much easier to say, no, we can't.
Than
to really solve it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, we have to wrap it up because Jeff's got pizza, but I just want to keep talking about this. I guess we'll just have to do another episode and another and another and another. Anil, I want to thank you so much for joining us. You can stick around for, we do a little thing if you want and throw in some comments. We do a little thing at the end. And the last thing we do is our wish list. So if you have a feature, a Google feature or something that you'd like Google to fix, you can think about that right now. But we're going to start with Gina's tip of the week, which I think you might have already done, but go ahead.
Oh, yes. Actually, no, I didn't. Tip of the week this week, really super simple one to get friendly with your J and K keys on your keyboard because those move you up and down items in Gmail, Google Reader, and in Google search results if you're in the keyboard extension, right?
And in search results.
Yeah, there's an experimental Google search that you can join. And in fact, the link is on my blog. The link to this entire tip is on my blog. You can join an experiment where if you do a Google search, a little pointer will be next to the top result, and you can use the J key or the K key to move up and down the list, and then you can hit enter to open up one of those links or shift enter to open it in a new tab. So this works in Gmail. You have to actually enable keyboard shortcuts in order to use the J and K key, and this has precedence in Vim. J and K moves your cursor up and down.
No, do you think it's really VI that inspired this?
Geek
you are
from
a
Google,
geek.
So
you are a geek.
That wouldn't surprise me. Absolutely geeks from is. Google.
If they start doing Emacs key bindings, then I'm going to be impressed.
I think so. I mean, the advantage
no, it makes
is
sense. Yeah.
J and K isn't easy to remember for your brain, right? But it's easy for your fingers because if you're a touch typist, your forefinger rests on the J key, and a lot of keyboards, the J key has like a little nub on it. So if you have your forefinger and your second finger, you can move up and down lists in Reader and Gmail, and if you join that search experiment in search results. And I have to tell you, once you start using J and K, like you just can't, you won't ever go back.
This is why Gina is the best. Something that little can make a huge difference. That's fantastic. I mean, I knew about it in Gmail, but I didn't realize it extended to Reader and to search.
Yeah. And there's a ton of other keyboard shortcuts.
Enter / escape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my blog post has links to all the rest of them as well.
Wasn't it Control H that backspaced in the
That's
old
backspace?
Yeah.
And Bell, Control G. If we can bring back Control G, I want to ring a bell. Ding 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 ding
ding ding ding.
That's the one key that's gone. I guess probably that's all for the better. Your stat of the week, Mr. Jarvis.
So the number is 200,000. I have a project for with the City University of New York Graduate School of Journalism, where I teach in new business models for news. There are some. And in the research we did, we're going to present a lot of models at Aspen Institute on Monday. And you can go to newsinnovation.com and watch me do it on Prezi, I hope, if you're not a jinx, Leo. But the most astounding number we found is that there are hyper-local bloggers who aren't necessarily good at business, who nonetheless are pulling in $200,000 a year in advertising. And we believe that if a paper dies and there are metro-wide networks and smaller networks and other things, we believe a hyper-local blogger could be making up to $330,000 a year gross. So it's a real business in a real new way, as long as the newspapers don't think they own the entire market because they can't anymore. So 200K, it's a wonderful number.
That's kind of the Lou Grant argument. You're never going to get any blogger to go sit in a city council meeting for every day for 3 months. Of course you are. That's exactly what they do. They love it. They're crazy, but they love it. 200,000 a year. Is that from, it must be Google AdSense, right?
No, it's from selling to local advertisers. And we think
interesting.
That the services they sell to those advertisers, and if you can bring in metro-wide advertising and local networks and a little bit of e-commerce and other revenue, as I say, after 3 years, we see local bloggers making pretty easily $350,000, which doesn't sound insane when you realize that a community weekly paper in that market can pull in almost $1 million a year in advertising.
Wow. That's encouraging. So, that's really encouraging.
At the journalism school where I teach, this made us realize that we damn well better offer a course in how to be a hyperlocal blogger.
Yeah. Well, how do you be a hyperlocal blogger? Because I could use the money.
You go cover that boring meeting.
You got to do your own sales, too, though, it sounds like.
You go sell. But we're also looking at the notion of citizen sales, that maybe the journalist doesn't sell, but the neighbor down the way, the realtor who has extra time on her hands, can sell the advertising and make a business out of that.
Very exciting. Thank goodness. I'm really pleased to hear that. My tip of the week, very quickly, we kind of started to talk about it a little bit, and it's this new it's my tool of the week, and Google Reader really deserves to be the tool, but there's so much in it, I can't break it down. I mean, it's just out of control. And this came from a blog, it's an Indian blog. Amit Agarwal does it. He's an Indian blogger. It's an excellent blog called Digital Inspiration.
Amit is great. Yeah,
it's like a life hacker, really, right?
Yeah, he was great. We put link to him all the time.
Yeah. Well, Lifehacker, link to this. Download your Google Reader stories as PDF. He describes how you can take this new send to button. This is kind of fascinating because it's only been out for, it came out this week, right? I think.
Yep.
And already people have got these great things you can do. And it's partly because Google made it open. So send to started with a few basic social sites like Delicious, of course, and Facebook. They've added Friend Feed, I'm happy to say. But you can easily add Save as PDF using a PDF to mail system that's free. Also email this using a free email system that will email, by the way, even if it's, it drives me crazy. Hacker News, could you please put the full text in your feed? Please. All they put is the headline. But if you get something like that, you use the email this, you'll get the whole blog post, which is really nice. So using webtomail.com. So take a look at, I'll put a link to, it's already in our friend feed room and in our delicious notes. By the way, our delicious tags, if you go to delicious.com/twit/twig, you'll see what Gina, Jeff, and I have tagged for the show. And we also put it into their conversations room, which is friendfeed.com/twit-twig. And in fact, your comments would be appreciated. If you go in there, only Gina and I and Jeff can add stories to there, but anybody can comment on those stories, and it would really be great to get your comments on those.
Leo, there's an example. If we could just put it up one place and it goes to all, wouldn't life be nicer?
Yeah. Well, that's where aggregation has some power. We got to solve this. In fact, Gina, I think you started a conversation there. Is this the beginning of the distributed social web? I mean, that's really what we need, isn't it? Some sort of distribution system, federation.
Reverse aggregation. It puts it in our hands.
Yeah. Yeah. So take a look at that. Amit does a great job in explaining how to do this. And it's really thanks to Google because they've added some very simple ways to add features in the settings. It's in your settings page of your Google Reader. And now our wish list. Okay, you've had a chance to think. Anil, is there anything at all that you wish Google would do?
That's a tough one to be on the spot for. I feel like I wish they would bring together the 10 different services that are using my Google contacts list and get the one guy or gal on each of those teams that owns the user experience and get them all in a room together and have them kind of reconcile, have a little group hug and say, this is one great list, and you're all using it. Let's think about how we can have a good experience there.
Do you have any insight into the corporate, anybody? You wrote What Would Google Do, Jeff. Anybody have any insight into why Google is so kind of schizophrenic and disjointed? Is it a corporate culture problem?
My experience is they've chosen to do it.
That's what Anil that says that's what they want.
Yeah.
You would agree, Jeff?
Yeah, I think so. And they've, whether that's a feature or a bug, I don't know, but they've turned it into that, I think.
Is it the 20% time that causes the problem? And they've
No, it's more about management by chaos. It's more about allowing creativity to occur, and with that comes chaos.
Right.
Yeah, it's the 80% time that it causes the problem. I mean, I think there's this willingness to say we're going to let five people run off and be a team and do this, which is commendable and has great results. And as a result, also has this flip side, which is there's
they're
no
not
cohesion.
Talking. They're not talking. Yeah, Wave was created in Australia.
Cool.
Gina, is there anything on your wish list? As if I didn't know.
my wish is much more sort of nuts and bolts. I brought up the private feed thing in Google Reader. There's also, and actually, Leo, you and I should talk about Gmail a little more. There's a weird thing in Gmail. Gmail doesn't support wildcard search. So, like, if I wanted to search for, you know, the subject line, thank you, if I search for the, you know, THAN star, it doesn't come up. So I'm all about these, like, little nitty-gritty features. Every once in a while, I run across these. So wildcard search would be good in Gmail, as would be language search.
I hate to tell you, but in fact, this was almost going to be my tip. There's a new program just came out for the iPhone, I'm sorry to say, called Remail. It's a very interesting idea. This is a Y Combinator a startup. It downloads all your Gmail onto your iPhone and allows you to search it. Now, I don't know if it does wildcard, but it's very fast search. And what's interesting is they're not downloading attachments. They've got, I mean, I have several gigs on Gmail. They got it into a couple hundred megabytes.
Really?
Yeah.
Does it do, like, can you search, like, from Gina? Does it do advanced operators, like just subjects or just from lines or that kind of thing? Or is it just a general cross all fields kind of search?
It looks like it's a cross all fields search. So it would be cool. Nice to have some Boolean and some wildcards. But at least I now, you know, because everything's stored in my email.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it would be really, it works with any IMAP server. I use Fastmail, not Gmail, and it works fine. But now it does take a while, that first download.
takes
a little, you leave it on overnight.
Yeah,
and I think it's funny. There's so much focus on searching email, and Gmail search is pretty good. I wish I could search my instant messages, the ones that aren't on GTalk.
Oh, that's
like
interesting.
I get as much information through, you know, Instant Messenger as I do through email.
And you save all the conversations?
I save all the logs, but searching them is a pain in the butt, and I certainly can't do it on my phone.
I bet you Gina could write you a text command that would do that.
I don't think that solves the problem for everything. I mean, having a genius at hand doesn't scale.
A little sed, yeah. A little awk, a little grep. You got it all. There's no problem. Can we get a bash shell command here?
I'll send you guys a check later on.
you know you could do it. You're just holding out on us.
I actually think the convention is when you do a program for me, I'm supposed to send you the check, but I don't know. I don't know how your system works. Maybe Google's got you.
This could be a better one. I like it. Yeah, it's the new Gina Trapani system. I got a wish. I got two wishes. First, send me this gosh darn Wave invite. I'm ready. I'm waiting. Hurry up. I guess they're going to send out a bunch in September, right? 100,000 in September?
I think that they have been sending them out kind of in waves. I heard there was sort of a batch recently. Leo, you don't have an invite? I thought you said you tried it.
I tried it with a friend who had an invite.
It's
not the same. But the point is, if you don't send out invites to a lot of people, it's pointless anyway, as you
experienced. Because, Leo, we're all in a wave together.
Right. Oh, shut up.
I don't know if
shut up. I know you are. I could just tell.
Except everything is changing so fast, I have no idea what's going on the wave. So I'm just going to talk to you guys.
It is. It's like all moving at once. It's going to be a squirmy kind of feeling when you have 80 people.
Stop, crazy thing.
There's going to be 80 people in a wave, and it's just going to be. That's why I want to see what it looks like. My second one is, voice is so great. Google Voice is so great. And those of us who have it have been singing its praises. I know they're starting to send out invites. I want to get one for my family, my wife and kids. I want my kids to have one phone number now that they keep for the rest of their life. And it sounds like voice would be a good way to do that. So let's get those invites out to Google. Let's start. In fact, you know, you could let us invite friends. That'd be nice. Just a little invite button on there. Jeff, do you have a wish?
Well, I agree with you, Leo. I want a Wave invite. And then listening to the conversation about Reader, I think they've got to hire a designer from Apple.
Yes.
Simplicity works in search, but they've lost their simplicity in other areas, and they got to find a way to regain the zen.
I would rather they hire a designer from Flickr. I think you know, Yahoo's got to be bleeding good.
Might
people.
Be available
Flickr,
right now.
I was going to say, I think that wouldn't be too
and,
hard.
And Flickr has that, you know, that game feeling to it, what you were talking about earlier, Leo, of like the reward structure. You know, Flickr was built on a game platform, and it shows. There's rewards all over the place, and Reader has chores all over the place.
Flickr was built on a game platform. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Game Never Ending was what Ludicore built originally, and then turned very quickly into a photo sharing service. And so it's its mechanisms and mechanics, its reward structures are all built to support a game engine.
It was as accidental as Blogger was. Yeah.
Well, they missed a bet. They could have hired Paul and company from FriendFeed. I think they could have turned Reader into something. But
except none of us here could figure out FriendFeed.
Oh, that's so I'm not true.
And we all use Reader every day. Isn't that telling?
Yeah, we still use it. Yeah. All right. Hey, what a great show. And Neil, thank you so much for being a part of it today.
Thanks. This has been a blast. I've been fans of all of you for forever. So I'm geeked out just to be here.
Well, we're going to get you back. There's no question about it. We really appreciate your taking the time. And Neil is vice president at Six Apart, and he blogs at Dashes, DASHES.com. That's his. He owns it. Don't you dare That's mess right. with it. It's his place on the web.
I dare you.
Knock this dash off my shoulder. Gina Trapani, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to have you on. I look forward to doing a lot more with you. Smarterware.org is the place we can get her to write a command line utility to do anything.
Anything, thank you so much.
Anything at all.
And this is really fun. Today.
Oh, so much fun. Jeff Jarvis, thank you for being here at buzzmachine.com. Go get your pizza.
Will do.
Thanks for being with us. A little program note. We will start the show a little bit early from now on so that Jeff does get pizza night on Saturday. So if you want to watch us do this live, you can live.twit.tv. It'll be starting at 2:15 Pacific. That's 5:15 Eastern time every Saturday. And we're going to have a whole new studio the next time we're on. So thank you all for being here. The new audio system comes in. It's all going all digital. I don't know if it's going to be better or worse. We'll see. It could be the Google Reader of audio systems. I don't know. Very nervous. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.